Are you under a no movement order
in your county? No, I am not, but everybody is basically acting as if they were one.
Is Orange County under one? Are you in LA? Which county are you in?
Los Angeles County. No, it's all we have right now is no restaurant seating, that bars closed, that kind of stuff.
And that's statewide, right?
I can only speak to Los Angeles.
Mm. I would assume it's statewide because Texas just came out today, Governor Greg Abbott. Or as my sister-in-law calls him, Greb Agate.
Greb Agate.
He passed or signed an executive order today banning all restaurant and bar, dine-in, basically all the dining rooms closed.
Yeah.
And he ordered all schools closed until April 3rd. But it seems like all of these closures are kind of stopgap measures because it's a lot less daunting to close things for 2 weeks than it is to close them for 2 months.
Yeah.
So I expect, as does most people, that if schools are closing when the state of Texas has 20 or 200 cases, I don't even know how many we have, but it's just 100 or a couple hundred. I don't imagine schools are going to start going back when we have 2000.
No, it's for the long haul, I'm afraid.
Yeah. What do you think about this? Do you think that we're going to be under kind of quasi quarantine type measures for a few months?
I'm in the few months camp. Governor of California, he basically said that schools aren't coming back for this school year is likely done, and that they're not coming back they're out for the summer basically, and that's a really long time that will impact. Spread out and impact.
Well, that's how it affects our lives, but it's equally affecting everyone at Google's lives, and Google as a corporation as well. And there's been a surprising amount of Google-related coverage around this thing. I feel like more so than probably any of the other big Silicon Valley giants, would you say?
Oh, definitely. Oh, absolutely. That's the case in two fronts. The first is they have tens of thousands of employees, so all North American, European, African, and Middle Eastern offices are under work from home orders. So that's again tens of thousands of people, and that's like the internal response, but the resulting impact is that we've already seen is longer support times because they're reducing staff there, longer app review times on the Play Store, YouTube switching to automated video reviews so that it can again reduce the impact number of human reviewers that it needs to keep on staff in office. In general, they're just trying to increase automation when possible. So I would imagine YouTube, a lot of ads, so maybe switching to automatic reviews and that kind of stuff, and just basically prioritizing the support that they do give to like account security and some reviews of advertising. So it's while Google and other tech companies are so much better suited for working from home on day one, it's what has to happen is that there's still an impact because of disrupted workflows. But I think the one that most people are going to most they're going to feel to some degree is how just yesterday the Chrome team announced that upcoming Chrome and Chrome OS releases are going to be paused. We were expecting a major update with Chrome 81, the usual 6-week update cadence that was supposed to happen on Tuesday. But the next day, Google said they're pausing for two reasons there. Of course, everybody working from home is it's a different, there's disruption to their cycles. But the other thing is they want to make sure there's a stable version of Chrome that people can use, that they don't want to do anything that causes any bugs. And they've had this version of Chrome out for the past 6 or 7 weeks now, Chrome 80, and they just want to keep with that stability.
Yeah, but I guess to be fair on that one, I think I'm not sure if many people are going to really notice.
Yeah.
Because, you know, to us, Chrome 81, Chrome 82, you know, the full point releases are quote unquote big releases. I think to the vast majority of Chrome users, they probably don't know a difference between Chrome 40 and Chrome 80. So, you know, it's probably one of the lesser significant things that I think could be paused. And like you said, I think it's probably wise that they pause things for a little while just so that they don't
introduce bugs,
break any critical infrastructure, especially not right now as telecommuting and teleconferencing with family and stuff like that has become such a core function of our society all of a sudden. But yeah, I mean, so there's been so many different first party Google product impacts. Another one was that the creator of Google Duo, Justin Uberti, he came out and said that this past March 16th, when was that, Monday, it was the biggest biggest day for video conferencing in the history of Earth by a long shot. And so this was obviously the first Monday morning, I think the first big work day after, you know, that past the weekend. This past weekend was kind of a crazy weekend in terms of coronavirus news, and it led to a lot of jurisdictions, encouraging work from home and things like that. And a lot of, obviously, Silicon Valley companies and plenty of companies around the world decided to institute working from home. And he also has access to WebRTC metrics as a whole, as one of the creators of WebRTC. For those that don't know, WebRTC is basically the technology that Google Duo and other, video calling applications use as their, backbone. So Justin has access to all those internal metrics. He said that this past Monday was the biggest day ever for video calling. So that was pretty significant. And some other things. The Google Cloud Next 2020 conference. This is really interesting, and I was quite frankly a little bit surprised. This conference was already an all digital conference, was it scheduled for April, I believe, at some point?
April 6th to 8th. It was coming really soon,
and Google decided to delay it due to the coronavirus, which is kind of surprising. A lot of people assumed that, you know, with Google I/O being delayed, that we might see Google I/O happen on those same days, just digital, because digital teleconferencing or accessing all that content via the web would be assumed to be relatively safe, but maybe not. I mean, maybe the outbreak in our country will still be, I guess, peaking in May, and we might not see Google I/O happen until later. That's kind of what that signals to me. What about you?
Yeah, from a logistics front, I think the best way to record sessions or just like any talks, everybody has to be in person. It's at least presenters have to be in the same room. And I guess there's an element of having to have tech production staff, technical staff, that kind of stuff, recording it. And to offer a good experience, that still requires so much people congregating and moving in and out to record their sessions. And at the end of the day, that's that some jurisdictions, as you were saying, is imposing the number of people that can congregate. And
yeah,
I would think any effort trying to maintain a large conference, a large Q&A experience, a live stream experience would require enough people, too many people to...
Yeah, that's a good point. I actually didn't think about that, that the CDC is actually recommending on a high level for the entire country right now that no groups larger than 10 are gathering. And, you know, some jurisdictions are mandating that, which is certainly the case in California of all places right now. But yeah, I can imagine there would be liabilities if Google was asking their employees to come, even if there's even if it's simply production employees. There's pretty much no way I can imagine that they would be able to get the number of people in an office down to below or in a room below 10 for something like this.
Yeah. And so, for one example, I guess, we saw yesterday Apple announced a bunch of products, and they had their software vice president, Craig Federighi, showing off the new iPad OS trackpad gestures in a single shot kind of camera arrangement that seemed fine, but lacking in polish given the circumstances. So who knows how what the production behind that was. And if you're trying to do that over 3 days with hours and hours and hundreds of sessions, with it's the logistics are hard.
I wouldn't be surprised if that video was shot weeks ago, though. I think Apple is typically pretty far ahead of the curve on that kind of thing, but who knows? Yeah, that's fascinating. It's fascinating as a whole. I mean, I was one that was saying it seemed unlikely that that Apple would be launching any hardware at all this week, given the circumstances. So that was surprising for me to see. I don't know what the kind of larger purpose or goal is behind that, considering it seems unwise to launch a product when all of your retail stores in the country are closed.
Yeah.
It seems like they're signing up pretty early for, you know, disappointing sales on a brand new flagship product. Not to mention just the mind space factor, which is, I think, I'm not sure how much people are actually paying attention to consumer electronics launches right now, or worrying about upgrading their tablets. It's just really interesting. I feel like part of it may be, I don't know if you've thought about this, but I feel like part of it may be Apple trying to signal to stakeholders that regardless of the virus, that they're going to keep
functioning.
Yeah, they're going to keep functioning. And I think it's good to remember that China, for instance, Apple has opened up almost all, if not all of the retail stores again that were just a couple months ago, all closed down. I think it may be signaling that, you know, they're not going to let this virus get in the way of their normal cadence. I know Apple has traditionally always said we launch a product when it's ready. And I guess that is still the case, even if there's a virus in the way. So I guess the product was ready. But yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem like, I don't know what I guess on Google side of things, there's some hardware we can talk about. I guess one of the major ones that's coming up, we've talked about a lot already, is the Pixel 4a, which was supposedly going to launch, or assumably going to launch at the Google I/O 2020 conference. And now that physically is not happening, we don't even know if it's happening digitally, or rather when it will happen digitally. We don't really know when the Pixel 4a is going to launch. I'm curious to see if Google will let the virus affect its launch schedules, unlike Apple. But I guess we can talk about another piece of hardware, which is something I actually reported on last week. And this might be what most people are joining us to hear about. It looks like Amner just dropped off the stream, but hopefully he'll be back here in a second. This is the Chromecast Ultra, which is a device that's already existing. Of course, it is the first gen has been out for a few years. It launched back at the first Google made by Google event in 2016. And at the time, it was just the 4K kind of maxed out better version of the original Chromecast. and came at a price tag that was pretty much double and had physical size that was a little bit bigger and a little heftier. And yeah, it was basically the 4K Chromecast. And now we're hearing from reliable sources, I can say very, very confidently, that the second gen Chromecast Ultra is actually in the works. So the second generation Chromecast Ultra is an interesting device because it's kind of going to be kind of the meshing of a couple of different worlds. The one world being the Chromecast line, which has been in existence for a long time now and has traditionally been associated with a device that allows you to kind of cast any content from your phone or a tablet or any other device up to a television. And the other world being the Android TV world, which has found its success in the last few years with operators or television original equipment manufacturers, which, you know, has seen basically any modern television or many modern televisions shipping with Android TV as the operating system that powers them. This new device called the Chromecast Ultra, it will be called Chromecast Ultra, just like the last Chromecast Ultra, and it will have a similar form factor in that it will be a dongle with a short HDMI cable that will plug directly into your TV and a separate cable that will either go into the USB power port in the back of your computer or to the wall, just depending on your circumstance. Some TVs don't have USB ports on them, so there's kind of an option there for whichever direction you want to go. But yeah, this device is going to be a meshing of those two worlds in that it will be a Chromecast and it will look like a Chromecast. But on the OS side, it will be powered by Android TV. So it will be a more full-fledged, more capable operating system that will allow you to access the Google Play Store and install apps and, you know, have access to all of those apps directly on the television screen. And you'll be able to control all of those apps with a separate remote. So that's pretty much the report. This is Chromecast Ultra, and it's going to be based on Android TV. What's your major takeaways on this?
There's a real finally moment to Google making a physical remote for the Chromecast line, which some people prefer, and it's obvious to see why some people would want to use a remote versus their phone to control their devices. It's interesting that it took them adding Android TV to this Ultra in order to do that, but there's so many fineries to this product. People have been waiting for Google to make a new Android TV device, their own first-party Android TV device, instead of just relying on the NVIDIA Shield, the current gold standard, I guess. And so, yeah, Google is finally getting into this home entertainment market, which is, it's interesting for them to see this, to, from looking at how they're approaching hardware and what's doing well for them, it's interesting that this is one of those very Nest Mini, Google Home like cheap devices that they should be able to do very well with. And if they continue with offering an Android TV device, it could be successful for them. They could have another cheap streaming hit.
What do you think about, I guess, I don't know. To me, this feels like a device that should have launched 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
That's kind of the big downside, I think.
Yeah.
Well, looks like we lost Abner. Yeah, so as I was saying, it seems like the big downside with this device is that it seems like it should have launched a few years ago. As many know, the Fire TV Stick has pretty much been a full-fledged operating system, kind of in the same sense that this will be. It and also in the same hardware form factor, in the form factor of a dongle. So yeah, I mean, it just seems like by now, I mean, one of the big things that made the Chromecast so popular in the early days, and one of the things that kind of made it such a compelling product, especially at $35, was that many people still had TVs that didn't have any kind of robust smart functionality. A lot of TVs didn't mm-hmm. have built-in app store, or something like that. And so the Chromecast originally was, an add-on for any TV, especially the old legacy televisions that you may have had laying in your house, all in many rooms in your home. You could just buy a Chromecast for each room, for each TV, and each TV would suddenly become an internet connected device. And that to me was the biggest selling point of the Chromecast in its early days. And
what's the selling point of this device to you?
That's the thing, is it feels like, obviously in many ways, the Fire TV Stick on Amazon side of things has been a better version of the Chromecast. A full-featured version of the Chromecast, and Google did not have a product that filled that.
Okay, so this is
filled that void.
This is what I'm. Okay, two questions. One, who to dive into the criminology of why this product exists. One, is this a product out of the Android TV team, or is this a product out of the Made by Google hardware team? Is this Who is supposed to benefit here? Is this meant to bring Android TV to a larger audience? Or two, is it part of Made by Google wanting to get into the living room in a more significant fashion? And to that end, why does this product exist? Is it because Google is seeing itself lose market share? Again, from the Fire TV, or do they have some, what is the rationale for this product existing is my big question.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I think the rationale might just be very simple, that there is still some market for this kind of device, because not everyone's TVs are smart, and many, many TVs have, even modern TVs have built-in operating systems that are just not good, and many, many people would prefer Google's operating system and have access to the Play Store and all the benefits that come with having an Android TV device. So I think the proposition might be very, very simple in that, there's still some market for this kind of device. Obviously, mm-hmm. Amazon is still selling Fire TV sticks. And if you are comparing products side by side, if you have a TV, maybe it's even a modern TV, and you just want Android TV, or you want a better operating system than the one that's running on your TV, you're just going to compare products side by side and see which one's the best. And as of now, Google's first party offerings are limited. The standard Chromecast is purely a device for casting content from other devices, and they did not have something that was equivalent to the Fire TV Stick. And so if people are comparing features side by side and seeing, okay, I could get a $35 Chromecast or a regular Chromecast Ultra, and it's pretty limited compared to the same exact pricing for a product on Amazon side of thing that on the surface seems to do so much more. That seems like it really just feels like this product's just filling a hole in their offerings. And it feels like a hole that should have been filled a long time ago. I think that maybe part of the reason it didn't exist was because Google was trying to really push Android TV to be the ubiquitous television operating system. And while it's been very successful, it hasn't quite reached ubiquity, and now they're kind of just accepting the state of the market and
it's
trying to get in as many more people as they can.
I would agree with that. So our TV today is so many set.
Looks like we're losing Abner again. So yeah, that's the Chromecast Ultra. We don't really have any information yet on when it's going to be launching. We assume, based on the timing of the leak and the timing that our source has provided us information, that this was probably originally planned to be launched at Google I.O. 2020 alongside other, presumably other made by Google products, including the Pixel 4a. But it doesn't seem like that's going to happen if Google I.O. doesn't happen. On the pricing side of things, we're not sure what's going to happen on that. We do know that the original Chromecast Ultra is currently $69. And we do know that very similar products in terms of features from Amazon are priced in the range of $50, $60. So we would assume that if Google wants this product to have any kind of chance of success, that it would need to be priced probably similarly to the current Chromecast Ultra, despite the fact that it will include a physical hardware remote and presumably updated internals. Yeah, so I think that would lead many people to think that if it has so much more in terms of features than the original Chromecast Ultra, then it might require a price bump, but I don't think that's going to be the case. I think this is the kind of product that should have launched 3 years ago at $69, and I just don't see them bumping up the price on something that should have been launched a long time ago.
Yeah.
So that's kind of all I've got on this. It's really interesting because a lot of people are noticing that Chromecast is a brand that does not exactly, I mean, Android TV is an entirely different base operating system than Chrome. And so we have a weird, it's a weird branding situation. We don't know what that's going to mean quite yet, but I would assume that maybe Google will, I mean, we've seen other operating systems that have kind of faced this dilemma of confusion with Android and Android brand kind of dropping off in other ways. I would not be surprised to see Android TV drop the Android in one way or another. So yeah, that'll be interesting to see. And hopefully this product will launch sooner rather than later. I would guess that this product and the Google Pixel 4a, assuming the coronavirus situation does not cause any problems, it probably will just be announced via a press release, just like Google has done in the past. So yeah, that's the Chromecast Ultra. Are you back now, Abner?
Yes, I am. No idea why.
Do you have any thoughts? What were you trying to say before you fell out?
Yes. It's just the idea of wondering where this product is coming from. And oh, right. So the thing I was getting at was it's set-top boxes and cable providers are using Android TV. And a lot of AT&T being the most notable example, they have this new Android TV box that is provided with their streaming offerings. So in that sense, a lot of people are more people than ever are getting Android TV. But on the flip side, they're not knowingly getting Android TV. There's no, I don't know, direct consumer relationship that Google has with that Android TV, with their operating system, with Chromecast. So that could be another avenue.
Yeah. Android TV is not a super consumer facing brand at all, really. I mean, all the TVs that run Android TV, they're not telling you all the time. It's not really a selling point, so to speak, that a TV has Android TV versus any other operating system. I don't think it's really well known. So
yeah,
it's one convenient factor here. Yeah. So speaking of the Pixel 4a, as we were talking about a little while ago, apparently this stream is just really not supposed to happen considering you're having all these connectivity issues and now it's heavily thundering outside right now where I'm at.
Oh, it's also kind of raining here, actually.
Wow, that's surprising. In LA, but yeah, not to mention who knows what the effect of, I mean, I don't know how much this is happening in your area yet, but it seems like some areas are kind of seeing their internet service providers get a little bit hammered in some places in the world right now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
Netflix is apparently significantly downsizing their throughput in the United Kingdom, I believe. I forgot what it was.
All of Europe to save 25% of bandwidth.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, who knows what effect that's having on the stream? Probably none at this point, but would not be surprised if that became a factor in the future. Anyways, Pixel 4a and Pixel 5, those are a couple more products that many people are wondering about that we've seen some more information drop in the last couple weeks about. We've seen many, many leaks about the Google Pixel 4a, pretty much all of the first major leaks showing the device in person with its hole punch display up in the top left corner and its fabric cases. Yeah, and we've seen some specs confirmed in hands-on video, which showed the Qualcomm Snapdragon 730, 6 gigs of RAM. And then there was a very interesting leak, a very surprising leak from, was it Evan Blass?
Yes.
I believe. Yeah, he basically posted, I'm gonna show it on the screen here. He basically posted the billboard designs for the Google Pixel 4a. So this is the Google Pixel 4a billboard, I guess. And it's pouring outside all of a sudden. I hope this doesn't ruin our audio. This is the Pixel 4a billboard, according to presumably some internal renders,
marketing agencies,
mockups that Evan got a hold of. It's the new Google phone, and it very clearly shows the hole punch in the top left corner, and looks like the black model has a lime green power button. I believe I can find that. Is that on? Yeah, here we go.
Minty.
Very minty. A mint green power button, rather. This particular billboard highlights Google Maps and the new Google Maps logo and Google Photos and Google Assistant.
So it's a new Google phone because they refer to the Pixel 4 as the Google phone. So that's why that's happening. To be honest, I did not like the advertising branding around the Pixel 4. It's very googly in the colors. They adopted their company colors and all that, but I didn't care for it. The colors seem too generic for me.
Yeah, it seems like everything that Google's doing is doing this white background with the five or the four Google colors.
Yeah, it's a bit much. Oh, it's a bit little.
It's a bit too minimal.
Too minimal. It just looks. Yeah, it's whatever. Who cares about branding? But yeah, this is the phone that I think a lot of people will like. It's everything it needs to be by the looks of it, barring any major last minute flaws that emerge. I think the company's going to have another hit on its hands.
$399 seems like a good price point. It does seem like this last couple weeks of leaks have confirmed one question that many people had, which was, would there be an XL model? And it seems like the case is
no. Shocking.
So, is it?
I think so. People like the big one. People like the big phone. And
well, this one pretty much has the screen size of the old big one and the body size of the old small one, right? So this is kind of...
That's true. That's very true.
The best of both worlds. You don't have to have the bigger... I mean, that's really what it is. It's the exact same screen size in a smaller size and smaller body. So, I don't know. I feel like this one meets in the middle and... erases the need for larger models. I did feel like the A series having an XL felt like a little bit too many SKUs for.
It is simpler. This approach is much cleaner, so I do give them that. And manufacturing must be simplified as well because of it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it did seem like a lot of SKUs for a sub line or sub, you know, like a secondary line of phones to have so many different models seemed a little bit over the top. So yeah, that's Pixel 4a. We pretty much know everything there is to know about it. It's going to be a mid-range phone, $399, 6 gigs of RAM, the exact screen design and everything that you're seeing. I can pull up another. I'm not going to do it, but yeah, it is what it is. Anyways, Pixel 5
is
also in the works and coming eventually.
Yeah.
What's the new? What's the news there?
So we have a lot of speculation that Kyle Bradshaw, he's by taking a look at AOSP, by taking a look at the Google Camera app, I think after looking at this evidence, quite a few people strongly believe that the Pixel 5 won't be a flagship phone in the sense that it won't have the Snapdragon 865 processor. Rather, what we're looking at is the 765, which I think one of the first from Qualcomm, one of the first phones was just announced with that chip, was just announced by Nokia. And what we're looking at is this the 765G, which does still have 5G support, because that's increasingly looking like an important thing this generation, even though it's probably too early. But we're looking at, basically this, presumably the not having the top-of-the-line processor will translate into monetary savings for people. But the question to ask is whether any of the past Pixels really needed that flagship chip in order to run the Google calibrated experience, the smoothness, and to add all those other things that Google does with its processing, with the camera. And if all those things are extra to providing the experience of a Google phone, then why bother? And might as well try to win by getting a cheaper phone in the context of everybody else doing over $1,000 phones this day and age now.
Yeah, it seems like Google has given up the rat race a little bit. It's a little bit unsurprising. It seems like this has kind of been, I bet Google has been planning this ever since the Pixel 3, if I were to guess. I would guess that, it became very clear that after there was no growth year over year from the Pixel 2 to the Pixel 3, with the Pixel 3 being as good of a phone as it was, I think it became pretty clear that Google was not going to be able to compete as the kind of third player in the market, kind of, compared to the or competing with the Apple Samsung duopoly that we have. I think Google probably realized pretty quickly that they were going to have to compete in a different way. And especially after the Pixel 3a success at the lower price point, I think that they realized that if they do a similar motive, they kind of with the Pixel 3a, launched a phone that I think was, flagship level in some of the most important ways, like the camera. And they're kind of, I think go with the Pixel 5 and Pixel 5 XL, I think they're going to be doing a lot of the things. I think they're going to be able to accomplish a lot of the same things that they would with the highest end chipset, just using the more middle range 765G. I don't know. It seems like Google is going to be able to accomplish on a user experience standpoint, probably an indistinguishable, functionality.
I totally get that. It makes sense why. But at the same time, you called it like a rat race of specs earlier. And a part of me feels like it shouldn't be hard to get a flagship chip in a phone. There is something about, I think, having the top line specs, even if it's practically meaningless in application. I think there is a base minimum that you should reach, that Google hardware should be capable of reaching, to release a standard phone and then offer its additional software customizations and tweaks and whatever. But the part of me feels like they're going to lose an audience that has always expected their phone to have the top of the line specs. Like, yes, those consumers, it's worth asking them why they need the top of the line spec. But there's certainly a minority of people where the specs game is important to them.
Yeah, I think that they're having to realize that if they're going to continue to make phones, they need to have phones that are actually going to sell. And I think they've realized with the last four generations that none of them are going to sell if they just keep doing the same thing, which is to build a parallel competitor to the flagships that Apple and Samsung are launching.
But is this their decision to switch to lower chips? Is it born out of like a genuine strategy move, or them realizing that the 3A they can succeed this way, or is it coming out of a place of weakness in which they need to find a way to keep making phones? I know in the grand scheme it doesn't matter, but philosophically it kind of does.
Yeah, I mean, I think with the Pixel 3A, they kind of and the 4A will follow. I think they created a new low end, which I think it's crazy now in 2020 to think of $399 retail and $299 with, you know, a gift card or some kind of promotion as the low end. But I think that the Pixel 3A was the new kind of budget phone when it launched, in comparison to the inflating prices of the high-end devices, which, you know, we saw the Galaxy S20 launch at $999 minimum. And so what they did was they basically launched a phone that was similar in functionality at a price point that was, you know, they kind of created a new category. They launched a phone that was suddenly, I mean, you could find the Pixel 3A, you can now find the Pixel 3A for $200 or less. You could find it for $200 or less pretty quickly after it launched. And I think with $1,000 phones being common, a $200 phone is now very, very cheap. And they launched a phone at that price point that was functionally very similar to any phones that you could launch. And so it seems like Google as a whole is kind of realizing this value play that they've been doing, or they did before they started the Pixel line. This was something that went back into, you know, the Nexus days, of launching phones that were really good for the money. It seems like they're kind of reverting back to that, because their attempt at putting all of their marketing muscle, whether it be their own and Verizon's, just didn't work. It just didn't work. And so I think they're kind of reverting back to this previous philosophy of doing something that is a very high value. And it seems like with the Pixel 5, they're going to create yet another new category, which, you know, you could say that the Pixel 3A in a way created a new low end, because it wasn't that long ago that a phone for $199 or $99 was really, really awful. And I think the Pixel 4 or Pixel 3A was a really good phone at those prices, $199, $299. I think that what we're going to see is them create a new mid-range of sorts with the Pixel 5 and Pixel 5 XL, in that I think from a user experience standpoint, most people probably won't be able to meaningfully differentiate between the Pixel 5 and the Galaxy S20 at $999. And I think the Pixel 5 is going to launch at $599. And I think it's going to be pitched as a value. And I think that the reason they're doing that is because it seems like building a premium phone that goes head to head with the big flagship phone makers just hasn't panned out as they would have hoped.
It makes sense. I don't disagree. I'm just
Well, looks like we lost Abner again.
I'm back. Yeah.
What were you saying?
It's I'm curious if we ever just get how Google will be explaining it on stage or in interviews with people. But I am ultimately very curious how they position the Pixel 5, whether they're going to lean into this, we're making a new category suggestion that you gave, or whether they'll just continue surfacing the experience and and all those things that they add on top of Android.
Yeah, I that's kind of been another thing with the Pixel lines, is that they've always focused on the kind of Google experience more than the specs game. I think, with the exception of the camera, obviously the camera has been a very
exceptional
at the forefront exception. Yeah. And to be fair, I think the camera is probably, if you're considering things that most people probably care about when they buy a phone, I think that Google nailed it with the original Pixel, in gauging that the camera was an area that had vast room for improvement, that Google's strengths in AI could vastly improve that for its own camera, for its own phones. And that it would be meaningfully, it would be a meaningful improvement for just the user experience for most people. And they did that kind of at a time when, the other flagship phone makers were focusing on, out-competing one another in terms of specs. And I think that was very prescient of them. And I think that with the Pixel 5, they're just going to continue that story, just even more so, it's all about the way Google Assistant improves the phone. It's all about how they have the best camera. It's all about how it is a meaningful addition to the rest of your Google ecosystem if you already have a bunch of Google products, and that all ties together in a cohesive way. And it I think the Pixel 5 in general is going to be a good phone in terms of user experience. So yeah, I don't know. I think them not trying to compete side by side with the top of the line flagship processor with Samsung is kind of an admission of defeat. But who knows? Maybe they'll be able to find success in their own way. This is another thing. It would be interesting to see if Google, in light of this, in light of admitting defeat in the mainstream flagship phone arena, will they continue experimenting with very high-end phone hardware and maybe launch something that is lower in volume but kind of ambitious in terms of technology? Do you think that's a possibility here in the coming years?
I think that they could have done that within the first 5 years. I think that at the first 5 years of their hardware game, I think they're at the point where they need to scale, whether they need to become other Google services with large amounts of users, with a billion users. I think they're at the point where they need to start executing, and I'm not sure when we would see a turn to experimentation, so to speak.
Personally, I'd be very interested in that.
Yes, we all would. We would personally die, but there's a market.
Well, major takeaways, just kind of sum up this segment. Pixel 4a is coming. We don't know when. It doesn't look like it's going to be May, as was expected. If it does come in May, it will probably come in the form of a press release of some kind, because it doesn't look like by May the coronavirus situation is going to be figured out enough to have a virtual Google I.O., at least not at that point. And the Pixel 4a is, as expected, going to come at the same price as the Pixel 3a, and will be mid-range in terms of all its specs, and will kind of be a perfect follow-up, with a body and a design that's very modern. Similar to, yeah, some modern flagships with its hole punch front-facing camera. And then the Pixel 5, we've pretty much all but confirmed that it won't be a quote-unquote flagship, in terms of Qualcomm processor, because the 865 is going to be very expensive, and it seems like Google has just admitted defeat in terms of competing with the other 865 supporting phones. And it will probably come at a lower price tag too. We don't have any solid information yet on price, but that's that. As of yet, that's what we're expecting for the Google Pixel 5. finally for this week, Google released the Android 11 developer preview 2, which had a bunch of new features. If you want to tell us
all about those. It's always a grab bag of stuff.
I'm going to pull up the everything new and see if maybe you want to just walk us through it.
Yeah, definitely. So
we go bottom to top.
Yeah, bottom to top. Let's go with that. So yeah. the most iconic thing that you'll be seeing is the notification shade. Google introduced this large gap between conversations, what they're calling alerting notifications, and silent notifications. So probably the reason for this big spacing is they want to really push the idea of conversations, of having dedicated threads. Last month they called this one of the most important things you do on your phone, talk to people. So they really want to improve this experience. But they could probably reduce the gap between the spaces because people care about their vertical space and just seeing more notifications. Next up, built-in screen recorder has a UI now. It's a very welcome change for Google to finally start adopting this feature after basically every other OEM already has this. Then we're getting into some tweaks, wallpaper redesign. This is obviously a Pixel experience that they're tuning up. Again, a thing we saw last in the Android 10 beta cycle is the ability to customize your lock screen clock. That looks to be coming, finally. Just for getting into those just minor tweaks, since this is still just a developer preview, really, that we're probably getting the good stuff in May with the first beta. But just some other popular things. The Pixel 4 finally has the option for your eyes to be open, which was obviously a big scandal when Face Unlock on the live last October, but honestly, it's died down, hasn't it? The bit of a scandal.
Yeah, I don't know if I would call it a scandal, but it was a very clear omission whenever, you know, the Pixel 4 launched. In comparison, I think many people were comparing, you know, the Pixel 4's Face Unlock, both in terms of security and functionality and performance, compared to the Face ID on the latest iPhones. And that was a very clear way in which it fell short. And that's interesting to see that this was purely a software thing. This was it was purely a software development timeline lag, which is fascinating that they just decided to pull the trigger and launch it when they did, even though it wasn't feature complete. I guess that's Google for you, right?
Yeah, that's good. Maybe we'll see it in the next feature drop instead of having to wait for a new version of Android
entirely. Wireless debugging is
developers. Nice. This is something for developers, obviously. There's some weird bugs going on. So again, diving into the conversations thing, you can mark people as important. And this is where you see Google really embracing that idea of bubbles, or originally chat heads, because they're doing a lot of things that Facebook pioneered with chat heads in, I would say, 2012 or something. Mm-hmm. So if you mark a contact as important, the status bar in your notification when you get a notification for them will feature that person's face right in the status bar. So I'm pretty sure Facebook did the same thing as well when they launched Bubbles originally, and the Facebook. It looked good in that it was basically a 3GS, but. And it didn't go anywhere.
They launched a Pixel 4a simulator.
Yeah, basically to see how your display developers can adapt. That always a big tell as yep.
Well.
Yeah, that is basically the bulk of the changes here. And we have four more to go.
Do you think that we're going to stay on schedule, coming full circle here with the coronavirus stuff?
I do think they have enough time. Well, I should revise that. I honestly don't know. So the Android team is working on a month cycle, and the Chrome team would be on a six-week cycle. So technically, the Android team has a shorter period rather to get things out the door, and I don't think anybody would really mind at this point if they would be accepting if stuff like this got delayed come fall.
Yep, totally. It seems like all of Google's employees pretty much worldwide are all working from home. So yeah, it wouldn't be surprising at all to see this and many, many other things be affected by the ongoing situation. With the ongoing situation too, we wanted to a little programming note with the show. We're not sure how consistent we're going to be because the news cycle is going to be very, very different every week. Hopefully we're going to continue just a normal weekly schedule. We missed last week because things were particularly hectic in the States, I think. But yeah, I mean, given the circumstances, there's just so many unknowns. We already know, I mean, Abner and I both have people within 1, 2, 3 degrees of degrees of separation that mm-hmm. have the coronavirus and are actively dealing with it. So we expect the unexpected at this point. And so, yeah, we appreciate you tuning in today, and we hope we hope that in the coming weeks we will be able to keep things up as normal as we can. And so tune in every week here on Wednesdays. We are going to be uploading this podcast every week right after we publish the shows on YouTube. You can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms, such as iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, Google Play, and you can also listen over at 95google.com. And we apologize for today's hectic show. We had some connection issues and we had weather on both of our ends that are affecting things. Hopefully we'll have a better show next week for you, at least a more consistent show.
Absolutely.
Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.
Cheers.
Later.